6. I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Almost 25 years ago, Tim O'Brien's collection of interconnected stories about the Vietnam War, The Things They Carried, was published and became a bestseller. Knowing men who had fought in that war, I read that book and felt for the first time that I understood something about that terrible conflict and the soldiers and Marines who were there. Our guests Matt Gallagher and Roy Scranton both served in the Iraq War and have edited and each contributed a chapter to a collection of short stories called Fire and Forget. These stories are all written by veterans except for one who's a military spouse. While reporters and documentary filmmakers and memoirists have described their experiences in wars like Iraq and Afghanistan, our guests say that fiction can provide a deeper, different truth. They join us here in our Philadelphia studios. Matt Gallagher was a cavalry officer in the U.S. Army from 2005 to 2009, deployed to Iraq for 15 months. He's an MFA candidate in fiction at Columbia University, also a member of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, wrote a memoir called Kaboom. And Matt Gallagher, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us is Roy Scranton, and he served as an artilleryman in the Army's 1st Armored Division in Iraq from 2003 to 2004, and he's a PhD candidate at Princeton University. And Roy Scranton, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having us on, Mark.
You know, it's interesting, Matt, because you have written a memoir that came out of your blog from your time in Iraq, and now you've written a piece of fiction for this collection of short stories. Was that a dramatically different experience for you?
A little bit. Many of the same things in fiction and nonfiction writing transferred over quite smoothly. I just found myself after writing Kaboom that I had more stories I wanted to tell. That was how I felt at a particular moment in my life, seen through a particular worldview. Mm-hmm. I think one of the appeals of fiction is that it opens everything up. It's not limited by the storyteller. It's all there to utilize, and that was really the appeal of what brought me to fiction.
But did you feel you could not only tell a different story, but get to a different kind of truth?
Sure, yeah, a deeper emotional truth is what you often hear with fiction, and that's certainly the case with me, because, you know, I think as a reader and as a writer, I think we're all like this. When you pick up a nonfiction book, it's easy to justify as that's how that person feels, or that's what that person experienced. The fiction takes away that, and it's all on the story to fail or succeed on its own merits.
Let me turn to you, Roy, and I've never served in a war, so I don't actually know what I am talking about, but I would assume that there certainly are extreme circumstances, the obvious violence, the down times. But do you think there's something about war that lends itself to a certain kind of literature?
I don't know. I don't know if there's something about war that's particularly literary, but I do think there's something. There's a certain appeal in war for writers, for people who write. I mean, if you look back at, you know, human written culture,
sure.
Some of our earliest books are about war. It's one of the oldest subjects that we treat. And it has, Hemingway said this thing, it concentrates all the different experiences we have in life into a very dense and intense period. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but so there's something in that, the extremity, the intensity of that situation that really draws those of us who want to write and think about what it means, yeah, to be human.
Well, certainly, I mean, I'm thinking of both the Iraq and the Afghanistan wars. There's been a fair amount of coverage over the years. I've interviewed a number of journalists who have written books, people have written memoirs, you know, like yourself, documentary filmmakers, The Hurt Locker. I'm just thinking of all the ways that these two wars have been documented, but not a lot of fiction that's come out of this war. And perhaps this is part of what you wanted to do, Matt.
Yes, I don't think it's a coincidence that the fiction from these wars didn't really start coming out until after Iraq ended.
Because it takes time, you think?
I think it takes time, and I think there needs to be some kind of distance to have an understanding of what it meant, not just to individual soldiers or civilians, but to America as a society, as a country, to Iraq. As a culture and a society that has been totally wrecked since we invaded in 2003, so that distance I think is key to writing good war literature.
Interesting that the foreword to this book by Colin McCann, he writes all stories are war stories somehow. I mean, I hadn't thought of it quite that way, but this it feels like there's some essential truth to that.
Well, conflict,
exactly.
Right, is at the heart of storytelling, and. There's another thing Colum quotes in his foreword, where Faulkner says that storytelling is about the human heart in conflict with itself. And so in that sense, absolutely, absolutely. And that's what these stories are in Fire and Forget. They're stories about not just conflict on the battlefield, although that shows up, of course, but conflict within the human heart and within our own lives, how we deal with these decisions that we've made, how we live with them, how we work to, live in these different worlds, over there, over here, how you inhabit these different spaces, how you, become, how you build yourself as one person out of these very different things.
And it also grew out of, sounds like, a lot of time spent in a bar in New York talking, not just the two of you, but others as well, and I guess shaping the idea for this anthology.
Yeah, no, I think it was an important thing for all of us as emerging writers to have a place to congregate and trade ideas and experiences. We're trying to find some way to tell something deeper than just I was there, just because I was there in Iraq or Afghanistan. We wanted to do something beyond that, and kind of in our formative writing years to have one another to bounce each other these ideas off of, sometimes at a bar, sometimes at a coffee shop, in case my mom's listening.
I think she'd understand.
It was very helpful. It was very helpful, and it's what led to this kind of this kaleidoscope collection of 15 stories, very distinct from one another, but unified in subject about Iraq, Afghanistan, or the home front back here in the States.
And I also read, Roy, that there were other names that you considered for Fire and Forget, including one, and I don't know whether you were being ironic about this, I almost hesitate to say it, one title being, Did You Kill Anybody?
Yeah, that's the question that it shouldn't ever get asked.
I know, but it gets asked a lot, doesn't it?
It does. It does. It more often than you would think. But even Fire and Forget, there's a certain irony in the title, of course, because that's what you can't do. If you pulled that trigger, it's not something that you can just let go of.
Yeah.
And how to remember that and how to work through that. Certainly. One of the key themes, the stories in this book.
Matt, why is that such a terrible question? Did you kill anybody?
Because it simplifies the complexities of the experience. It boils it down to a one word or one sentence answer. When going to war is so much more than that. There's the phrase called war porn. People go on YouTube and watch 3-minute firefights so they can see what it's like, or they can play Call of Duty to get the experience. And it's demeaning. It strips away the 120 degree heat, the 20 hours that you've been awake on patrol preceding that 1-minute event. Someone from World War I said, war is mass boredom interrupted by sheer moments of chaos, and that experience was very true for many Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. So that question just takes away and diminishes all of that, almost for a voyeuristic thrill. That's why that question should never be asked.
Let me quote some. Did you want to add to that?
I wanted to add to that as well. Like another way that it strips away that complexity is that, if you have killed someone, then it was in a situation where, there's complex decisions going on in a second. And you know, to having to carry that weight and live with that. One of the stories in the collection, When Engaging Targets Remember, is a choose your own adventure story that literally puts you in the gunner's hatch of a Humvee on convoy, where you have to decide whether or not to shoot this sedan that's coming at the convoy after an IED goes off. And the sedan could have an IED in it, or it could have a family. You don't know, but you have to decide in that moment, you know, what to do to protect your fellow soldiers. And that's the kind of decision, you know, that a soldier has to live with, and that's the kind of decision that gets evaporated and effaced by that question.
Well, it's not a video game, right?
It's not a video game. It's real lives.
Let me quote something from the preface. In a sense, this entire volume is dedicated to every soldier or Marine who found coming back to the Mall of America stranger even than their first time under fire. Matt?
Yeah, no, it's not a coincidence that many of the stories in Fire Forget are homecoming stories. Because, you know, we like to think, I know before I went to Iraq myself, I thought war was something I would go to and hopefully come back from, and same with my men. What I didn't understand is it's something that will live within me the rest of my life, and will by proxy my close loved ones. I think one of my favorite stories in the collection that touches upon this is Siobhan Fallon's Tips for a Smooth Transition. Siobhan is a military spouse herself and writes from the perspective in her story of a military spouse who's waiting for her Army officer husband to come home, armed only with a 1,000-word magazine article giving her tips for how to welcome him home. Of course, those bullet points don't come in handy, and she finds herself having to ad hoc figure it out as these two people who love each other dearly try to reconcile what the past year has meant to both of them, and hopefully how they can come together and go forward. There's no smooth, easy answers to that, and I think that's why Siobhan's story succeeds so well.
And we're almost up at a break here, but interesting, including a military spouse in this book of stories written almost entirely by veterans.
Yeah, that was an easy decision to make, in part because Siobhan's just such a great writer and such a great storyteller, but also because it was important to have that perspective of, you know, what a soldier looks like when they come home, not just from the soldier's view, but what it looks like from the people at home. And, you know, being married into the military, you're practically in the military yourself. So we're really, really proud to have Siobhan with us.
And that's Roy Scranton, who joins us along with Matt Gallagher, co-editors and contributors to a new book called Fire and Forget, and it's subtitled Short Stories from the Long War. Both of them served in the Iraq War, both of them getting graduate degrees in fiction. And we're going to take a very short break. In fact, we're going to get some readings after this very short break, and lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Any questions or comments, give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. WHYY. We'll be right back.
Pennsylvania Family Support Alliance supports WHYY. April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and Pennsylvania Family Support Alliance is offering information on how to protect kids at pa-fsa.org.
Supporting WHYY, Lantern Theatre Company presents Henry V, extended through this Sunday, April 21st only. Philadelphia's own Ben Dibble takes on the title role in Shakespeare's epic journey through royal courts and battlefields. Following a bloody civil war, charismatic young King Henry sets out to repair a fractured England with a common purpose, war with France. From the rousing speeches to the dark eve of Agincourt, Henry V is a tale of raw power, punctuated by surprising moments of comedy. Information at lanterntheatre.org.
This is Terry Gross. Join me Sunday afternoon, May 5th, at the McCarter Theater in Princeton for Off Air with Fresh Air. I'll talk about my adventures hosting Fresh Air, play clips of interviews in which things didn't exactly go as expected, and then you could give me a taste of my own medicine during the Q&A. There will be more to see than just me. We'll have animations by WHYY's digital artist-in-residence, Tony Off. For information, visit whyy.org/events.
The Orthopedic and Spine Institute at Abington and Lansdale Hospital supports WHYY and uses minimally invasive surgery to help patients return to their normal routines faster. To learn more about new procedures that use smaller incisions and for patient stories, abingtonpowertoheal.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, again talking with Matt Gallagher and Roy Scranton and their anthology of short stories written almost entirely by veterans of the wars of Iraq and Afghanistan is titled Fire and Forget. Matt, I'd love to have you read the very beginning of the chapter that you have included in this anthology.
Absolutely. This is from my short story, And Bugs Don't Bleed, which is set in Hawaii. And very briefly, you know, what Henry James called the germ for my story was me wanting to. I was driving along the North Shore in Hawaii, which is a very tranquil, peaceful place. And I was thinking, after I had gotten back from Iraq and I was transitioning out of the army, and I was thinking of some of my former soldiers who were getting ready to go back to war, and the men and women who since 9/11 have gone 4, 5, 6 times. Back and forth, and wondering what is normalcy for them anymore. So this is from the beginning of that story.
Great.
I'm sorry to bring it up. Brett leaned across the table and placed his hand on Liz's arm. But has he been, did he? At a coffee shop table overlooking a gray cocoa marina, Liz poured sugar into her mug. A summer wind wailed in the afternoon. Palm trees and docked sailboats swayed to its will. Light rain wrapped at the roof and the concrete sidewalks. Though the only customers in the shop, Liz kept her voice low and measured. No, no, it's okay, she said. And no, nothing like that. I'm sorry, Brett. We should study. We need to study. She pointed to the law books piled on the table, but Brett, dressed in a checkered, button-up shirt, khaki shorts, flip-flops, and a yellow bracelet with the words Live Strong etched into it, shook his head. It's fine. That can wait. Talk to me. She sipped her coffee and laughed. I just don't know anymore. Last week, I woke up and saw the light on in the living room. Okay, he said. I got up to see if everything was all right. And Will was just sitting there on the couch, holding a poster of that solder guy. Who? He's an Iraqi terrorist. He brought it back with him from the last deployment. She was silent for a moment, then continued. I told him to throw it away a year ago. I think it was a year ago. It bothers me. His counselor told him keeping stuff like that wouldn't help him move on. It's all crinkled up and has Arabic scrawl on it, and terrorists in the desert with guns, big guns, and a big red moon and that creepy, creepy fat man. It's terrible. Then what happened? I told him to put it away because I thought it might trigger something. And then he turned to me and said, "Why the long face, killer?" I grabbed the poster and ripped it up and threw it away. He wouldn't come back to bed. What did he say the next morning? We didn't discuss it. He doesn't like talking about it. And his freakouts really don't happen that much, especially compared to some of the other guys. You should see what their wives and girlfriends have to put up with.
And that's Matt Gallagher reading from the very beginning of a story called And Bugs Don't Bleed, and it's included in this anthology, Fire and Forget. And thank you for reading that. And it's... You know, here's this young woman, you know, struggling to reconnect with this man in her life. There are things she doesn't understand. Even the guy that she's talking to says, look, he's selfish. He's only thinking of himself. You know, think of yourself and the kind of internal struggles that she's feeling about how do I be with this person?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in my story, Liz is the closest thing to a hero. Because she wants to stand by Will. She's willing to do it. He keeps pushing her away, though, because he's preparing to go back to war, and he doesn't think he can leave anyone or anything behind. And that's something I kind of wanted to put a twist on kind of the typical military view of relationships, that it's always the person back home that is leaving you, that's wronging you. In my story, and oftentimes in life, that's simply not the case.
And do you know where this story came from? For you personally, I mean, was it? I mean, it's sometimes hard to talk about. Where fiction comes from.
You know, it happened a lot, I think, in the military. You know, there's a common phrase called Jody. You know, he's the guy back home with stealing your girl. But over the course of 15 months, I saw a lot of my soldiers pushing their loved ones away as a survival mechanism, as a defense mechanism. And Will, in my story, having already been over there, is trying to do that before he goes over.
And protect her, perhaps?
Exactly. But oftentimes, you know, when people in their early 20s don't know how to express these things, so they do it in quick, violent actions that have dramatic consequences that they didn't intend for.
Roy, you have a story called Red Steel India, and I pulled a little section out of that. I have to say to our listeners, I had to look for a section that didn't have a lot of F-bombs in it, but, you know, I think I found one anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, the story has a lot of authentic dialogue.
It does have authentic dialogue, and I appreciated that.
That was important for the idiom of day-to-day life, which is what the story is about. Red Steel India is basically about two soldiers on a guard point. They're guarding a gate on a FOB in Iraq, and it's about their sort of day-to-day life. And they're also working with Iraqi soldiers, an early stand-up, the Iraqi army. So I'll just read a little section of dialogue that has them. So two Iraqi army guards sat smoking, flipping through my copy of the Vanity Fair issue with the big Michael Jackson expose. One of the Iraqis was younger, chubby, trying to grow a mustache and failing. The other was slightly older, his face pocked with acne scars. I watched them look at the fashion shots, the pictures of Neverland Ranch, the ads for J.Lo perfume and Philip Patek watches. "You like America?" I asked them. "Ameriki?" the younger one said. "Yeah, America good?" "Yes, Ameriki good," he beamed. "Michael Jackson good?" "Yes, yes, Michael Jackson. Ee-hee, very good." "You like Bush?" I asked. "Bush good?" "Bush good, yes." "How about Saddam? You like Saddam?" "Saddam no good. Saddam Ali Baba," the older one said, stamping his foot and spitting. "You Shia?" "Sunna." "Ayatollah Sistani good?" He shrugged. "Muqtada al-Sadr good?" "Al-Sadr very good," the young one said. The older one shrugged. "Shia?" I pointed at the young one. "Nam, Shia," he pointed at himself. "Bush good? No Saddam?" "Saddam no good." "Bush no good," I said. "Bush Ali Baba." "No," the older one said, aghast. "Saddam Bush same same," I said. "Ali Baba Ali Baba." "No, Bush good," the young one said. I shrugged. "Ali Baba." The older one pointed at me. "You Christian?" "La, no God." He looked cross. "Yes, God." "La," I said. He shook his head. "No good." I shrugged.
And that's our Roy Scranton reading from the middle of a story called Red Steel India, part of this collection of Fire and Forget. Thank you for that reading as well. Did you have is that based on a conversation either you might have had or you overheard having or you imagined having in Iraq?
It's based on conversations I had and saw and overheard. You know, this was set in 2004. So, you know, it was a particular time, I guess, in Iraq. But the cultural barrier, the language barrier between the American soldiers and even, you know, the Iraqis that we worked with, never mind the civilians that we dealt with, was huge, was tremendous. And trying to find ways through that and around that, trying to even, you know, make simple connections about how we each see the world was incredibly difficult.
I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but when I read that, I thought of Who's on First.
A little bit.
You know, that sort of back and the miscommunication, the sort of weird humor and this entertaining miscommunication.
Yeah, I thought of, I mean, my inspiration was about half Samuel Beckett and half Beavis and Butthead. And there was something that just seemed to capture the miscommunication that I saw, which, you know, for me was representative of the deep misunderstandings on the ground in Iraq from the foot soldier level all the way up to, you know, the State Department.
And there's a picture of Michael Jackson in this magazine, just to sort of add to the absurdity, right?
Right, absolutely. It's, you know, it was, as much as it was strange to see what Iraq actually looked like compared to what I thought it might look like or what I had been told it might look like, which, you know, there was a huge disparity, to be there and then to see, you know, in the little way, in the narrow way I could, what we looked like to Iraq was kind of mind-blowing.
Mm. Yeah. Let me just hold on to that thought, Matt. Let me just reintroduce the two of you. That's Roy Scranton, who joins us along with Matt Gallagher. They have co-edited and contributed to a collection of stories written largely by veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. It's called Fire and Forget. Roy served as an artilleryman in the Army's 1st Armored Division in Iraq. This was back in 2003 to 2004. He's now part of the English Department at Princeton University, where he is a PhD candidate. Matt Gallagher, also co-editor, contributor to Fire and Forget. And he was a cavalry officer in the U.S. Army from 2005 to 2009 and deployed to Iraq for 15 months. He's an MFA candidate in fiction at Columbia University, wrote a Iraq War memoir called Kaboom, also a member of IAVA. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Matt, looks like you wanted to add something, did you?
I just wanted to add that I think what Roy said about expectations of what Iraq was or would look like and what how those expectations got shattered is something many veterans experienced themselves, and it certainly filtered into these stories here. One that comes to mind is Andrew Slater's New Me, which is about a soldier who suffered a traumatic brain injury overseas and has to come back home and literally pieces his life back together. Mm. His memories of what he expected war to be and what he thinks he remembers war to be as he's transitioning back home, it all just weaves together. It's like a jigsaw puzzle that you know is missing pieces, but you can't help putting together, because what else do you have to do? And I think Andrew does a great job recreating that experience in his story.
But what's interesting, and you use the word Jody, Matt, mm-hmm. and you use the word FOP, Roy. I mean, mm-hmm. there's this language that comes out of the military, comes out of warfare. We're talking about fiction and writing, and here are these very many ways enduring words that come out of warfare.
Yeah, absolutely. As a writer and as someone who thinks about language, it's fascinating to look back at the different discourses that make up daily speech in the military. From these two examples are perfect. So FOB, forward operating base, is a it's a sort of acronym, and there's lots of that kind of professional language that distances you from the things that you're doing. You know, you acquire a target and engage. You don't like shoot somebody. You know, it's the sort of thing George Orwell talks about in Politics in the English Language. But then Jody, on the other hand, is a vernacular. It's like, you know, we sing songs about Jody, marching songs, and basic training.
And this is a guy who's taken your girlfriend, right?
It's a mythological figure, who lives in Army lore. And, you know, from Jody to the 18 or 20 different ways you can use the F-bomb, to the, 25 or 30 different ways you can use the word hua, there's just a fascinating and rich language in the military.
I'm curious because you were also editors of this, so you are editing the work of veterans. I mean, mm-hmm. do you think you had, and I'm looking at you, Matt, you had a kind of sensitivity, understanding, experience that made you a better editor than I'm imagining a civilian editor. I don't know who edited Kaboom, but whether they had been to war or not, and whether that makes a difference.
I don't think one has to go to war to edit war literature or even write it. My favorite American war novel is The Red Badge of Courage, which was written by a journalist 30 years after the fact. But yeah, does it help immensely? Mm-hmm. Of course. I know the language. I know when somebody's trying to pull a fast one and when someone's not. And it proved very helpful for me. I think one of the best parts of the genesis of this project was just having young veterans getting together and bouncing ideas and pieces off one another. I know my piece wouldn't be what it is without that process.
How about for you, Roy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are constant dangers with telling war stories, so telling people what they want to hear, telling people stories that they've already heard before so that they'll recognize them, telling people what you wish had happened or how it was supposed to have been. The influence of Vietnam on the way we think about war today is immense. And having that experience downrange and having that collective experience, where we could check each other and, bounce things off each other was tremendously important for putting this collection together.
And how do you imagine your readers then? I mean, do you have an image of someone reading these stories or this book, Matt?
Yeah, I have a couple different people in mind. I always think, when we're talking about the Vietnam generation, my mom was a Navy brat and a Vietnam protester, and kind of having those very mixed feelings, that nuance, I think is very reflective of how we as a country felt about Iraq and Afghanistan, which was, this is not how we mythologize World War II as the grand just war, but it's not Vietnam either. This is an all-volunteer force. They weren't drafted. How do we reconcile many of these conflicting things and the gray on gray rather than the black on white? I think of my mom for that, and because I believe Fire and Forget captures kind of the messy ambiguity mm-hmm. of these wars, mm-hmm. and I also think of some of my former college classmates that had they not been friends with me, would have no idea what a new veteran looked like. How are they going to read these stories? Are they going to find some kind of inherent humanity that they find familiar? And I believe they will.
How about for you, Roy, about 30 seconds before our next break?
Yeah, I would just add a little bit. I mean, people like yourself and your listeners, of course, and students and, people who want to understand, some of what, the wars that characterized or were such a big part of the first decade of this century were like. People who want to be able to get into that experience and explore the complexities of that moment, that era, and think about it. Those are the readers, I think.
Well, let's take a very short break. We've got some callers that want to join us as well. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Our guests are Roy Scranton and Matt Gallagher, co-editors and contributors to Fire and Forget. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY Opera Philadelphia, presenting Mozart's masterpiece, The Magic Flute, from April 19th through 28th at the Academy of Music. When the Queen of the Night's daughter is kidnapped by an evil sorcerer, it's up to the heroic Prince Tamino to save her. Mozart's The Magic Flute is a tale of unpredictable, death-defying adventures to ultimately triumph in wisdom and true love. Tickets and information at operafilla.org or by phone at 215-893-1018.
Widener University Law School supports WHYY. Widener Law offers flexible class scheduling through day and evening courses. Learning is reinforced with hands-on experience through clinics, practical skills training, and more. With a campus located in Delaware, the corporate capital, Widener Law is committed to offering a unique advantage. Learn more at law.widener.edu. That's law.widener.edu. Widener University Law School.
Princeton Medicine proudly supports WHYY. Princeton Medicine brings together primary care physicians, specialists, and surgeons from throughout central New Jersey to help provide greater access and coordinated care. Their specialties range from cardiology and geriatrics to cancer care, obstetrics and gynecology, and more. To find a Princeton Medicine doctor, 1-800-FIND-A-DR, that's FINDADR, or online at findadr.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moskowen. Again, talking with the authors and editors, contributors to Fire and Forget, an anthology of short stories written by veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars and one military spouse. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me see what Walt from Wildwood, New Jersey has to say. Walt, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, how are you this morning?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm a Vietnam vet, a 60-year-old guy now at this point in time, and I've been writing a book for about 3 years. And it actually started out as a Santa Claus book. When I first got home from Nam, had a friend that said, "Hey, you want to make some money?" And did Santa Claus at his store. And I never put the two together until years into doing this. There was a sign that was real popular. It said, "Santa, please stop here." And one time while I was going to a Santa thing, I just stopped at a house that never knew anybody there, nothing like that, and knocked on the door and met a 4-year-old mentally challenged little girl that just took my heart right there and then. And it brought back my memories of Vietnam because I'm sure as he was talking about his experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan that there were a lot of children that were killed in Nam. It was kind of hard to pick and choose at times, and unfortunately, I was one of the vets that that happened to. And I didn't put two and two together until maybe the third visit for this little girl. I would go there every Christmas, and they never knew who I was. In fact, she lived with her grandparents, and 1 year her grandmother said to me, "Who are you?" And I said, "Well, you know me. I'm Santa Claus." And they never knew who I was. And for 7 years that I went there, it was just a highlight of my life, and then all of a sudden I realized that I've got to sit down and write this story. And then it all started coming back to me, to my experience in Vietnam, and put two and two together. And I was with the 101st, and one of our things, and one of the creeds I've always lived by when I get into some sticky situations or a tough decision is stand up, hook up, and shuffle to the door. And it always brings my courage back and helps me make a better decision. But writing a book is just, I don't know how I want to say it, but stuff comes out that just makes me feel better and brings back experiences and makes me cry at times, even as old as I am. But
well, you know, Walt, let me take, first of all, I thank you for calling in because it's a great story, and even just thinking of as a piece of fiction, this idea of playing Santa Claus. And obviously, there are experiences that are working on you, perhaps as a writer. I'd just be curious, Roy, your thoughts.
Well, you know, thanks for calling in, Walt. Yeah. And it does, you know, it sounds like you have a great start on a piece of work, and folding the Santa Claus story and sort of how that happens to you, and then how that opens up all these other things in your life that you haven't been thinking about for so long. I think that's a tremendous way to tell the story, and I think it will help communicate it to people. And I'm just glad to hear that you're writing. You know, writing is hard, but I think it's an important thing to do.
Yeah. What do you think, Matt? Thanks, Walt, for the call.
I agree. I think it's a great thing that Walt's doing, and it's funny what he was saying. You know, the sight of the little girl brought him back 30 years. It's funny how that happens. You know, it could be a smell. It can be a sound. I live in Brooklyn, and every slamming dumpster lid does something to my brain that no other sound does. And in the children, of course, it's not, you know, I'm sure Roy feels the same way. Mm-hmm. And many of the writers, of all the writers in Fire and Forget, that I often think of the Iraqi children that we dealt with because they were running around in Def Leppard T-shirts from the 80s, we'd play them Def Leppard music, and they'd look at us like we were crazy, and maybe we were the crazy ones. I don't know.
I used to.
Thanks, Walt.
I had little disposable cameras I would take with me. I drove a Humvee most of the time on my tour in Iraq. So I would take little disposable cameras with me and take little action shots while I was driving around Baghdad. And there's one photograph I have that remains very important to me. We're driving through a neighborhood, and it was these two little boys by the side of the road. And this is in a commercial neighborhood. It's like stores, and it was very busy, lots of stuff going on. And these two little boys waving at us, and they had on... one had on pink pants and one had on like fuchsia purple pants, and they must have been like 6 and 8. And I just, you know, as I've gone on, say that was 2004. You know, every time I look at that picture, and I just think about them mm-hmm. living in Iraq, growing up in that war. I mean, you know, they must be teenagers now, if they're still alive. So yeah, that's been important.
Yeah, Walt, again, I appreciate the phone call to Radio Times, and it is interesting to hear from a veteran of the Vietnam War. I remember a couple of months ago doing a show about the Iraq War, and someone said, you know, that's the other 1%. There was so much talk about the wealthy being, you know, the 1% of this country, and the guest was saying, no, the other 1% are the military people and their families who have either served in Iraq or Afghanistan, and what a tiny, tiny percentage of the population it is.
Right. I mean, so different compared to the Vietnam generation, which was, you know, a societal and cultural scar across the country. People had to deal with it, mm-hmm. whether they were supporting it, whether they were protesting it, whatever. With Iraq and Afghanistan, it's almost an unforeseen byproduct of the all-volunteer force. If people don't want to deal with these wars, it was very simple for them to avoid. As a result, kind of a subculture of people that were bearing the burden arose out of that. I don't know what the right answer is. We're not going back to a draft. But just because it wasn't your son or daughter fighting in Iraq or Afghanistan, it was someone's. And I think going forward, as we deal with the carnage that these wars wrought in multiple countries, I think it's so vital to remember that just because the wars end doesn't mean that its effects are going to. And I really hope that we as a country don't continue to turn a blind eye to that.
Yeah. You know, Roy, I'm sort of a movie crazy person and see just about everything that I possibly can. And I have to say, when I go see movies that seem to be related to the Iraq War, I'm thinking of Hurt Locker. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty small audience in the theater. It always breaks my heart, to be honest with you.
Yeah. You know, it's a difficult thing because, you know, the stories, you know, we've been asked sometimes at readings or whatever, like, why is your book such a downer? Like, why are there so many difficult stories in it or, you know, stories about horrible things that happen? Well, you know, it was a war. Lots of horrible things happened. And it's a difficult thing to sit with and to think through and to live in that space. And I think that's one of the things fiction can do, is help us get there. But you know, it's hard to want to be shaken or torn or upset when, you know, there's already so much going on in your life.
And Matt, you were a pretty avid blogger, you know, when you were in Iraq, and that became your memoir, Kaboom, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I guess. Was that a good outlet for you at the time?
It was. You know, I wasn't even conscious of it, of course. You're so busy going from patrol to patrol, and I'd set up the blog really just a way to keep up with family and friends. You know, the war was and still is very political, so I didn't want to kind of send these mass emails to them and force it down their throat. But here was a place where if they wanted to read about what we were doing and experiencing, they could. Only after the fact did I realize that being able to get all those experiences and thoughts out of my head almost immediately or a couple of days after and try to make put them into form and try to make sense of something that could never make sense was actually just great for me.
Wow.
as a person. It was a very healthy thing, and in addition, just enjoying writing.
Let me see what Sam has to say. Sam, joining us on Radio Times. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi there.
I served in the Pennsylvania Army National Guard in 2004-2005 in Iraq, and I've been on WHYY with Dr. Dan Gottlieb talking about a book that I wrote called Service and Sacrifice. And I just wanted to relate on two points, is that the therapeutic act of writing, through my prolonged exposure therapy at the VA, we went through a process of recording these one-hour sessions of the worst-case scenarios I experienced in Iraq, and then I transcribed those into writing and then added to the story, was very therapeutic for me. And I wanted to add on the other side that all of this writing, including this anthology, is very educational to the public as to what these experiences are really like, and sometimes multiple deployments, and what, you know, the wear and tear on the family, because my wife and I are still struggling with the experience of having served in Iraq and being able to communicate with each other and stuff like that. So I also could relate when we're talking about the guard tower experience of being with the serving side by side with the local Iraqi National Guard, and not having 6 months worth of training, but not having the enough training to speak fluently, you know, and communicate with them, made it very difficult to accomplish certain missions and certain tasks.
Well, Sam, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and Roy, looks like you might want to say something.
No, just thanks for calling in, Sam. Yeah. That's great to hear. And you know, as I sort of said with Walt, it's that telling, writing is just, I think, good for everybody. There's just getting it out on the page. But then there's another thing too in being able to look at. You know, how memory gets constructed and how we tell these stories. And we've talked a little bit about the expectations that we had, you know, to look at how those things sort of shape our perceptions and shape mm-hmm. the stories that we tell and the stories that we tell other people. I think there's a lot you can get into with that sort of thing.
Sam, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Roy, let me go back to you, and I printed out some remarks that you gave at a panel on Veterans Day. This was at the Woodrow Wilson School for Public and International Affairs at Princeton University. And it grew out of a woman that came up to you and shook your hand and got misty-eyed and, you know, thanked you for your service. And from there, you wrote a really interesting piece about how those words resonated with you, and but also how it raised a whole bunch of different questions.
Yeah, it was. I'd just come off the plane from Iraq, and there were all these people greeting us and thanking us, and it was very difficult to know what to do with that, because they seemed to be more interested in feeling their gratitude and a sort of feeling good about thanking us, rather than even wanting to know anything about what we'd actually done or what we were doing, which puts us in a strange position, a veteran in a strange position. Do you fulfill those expectations? Do you cut them down and say something rude? Do you try to negotiate out of that? All these very difficult things with what people want to hear from mm-hmm. veterans, how people want to use veterans for their own emotional or political ends, or just what people think that veterans want to hear. You know, we're all sort of stuck in these conversations that are based on conventions that may not have much to do with what's actually going on.
Well, Amanda, I think people, myself included, have said those things, thank you for your service, in part perhaps because of the Vietnam War and mm-hmm. how veterans felt so mistreated mm-hmm. By the public, and wanting to somehow you know, not repeat that. But as I was reading your piece, Roy, I understand that the sort of shallowness that can be for a veteran or experience as a veteran.
Yeah, it can come across that way sometimes. Other times, you can tell that they mean it and that they just don't know how else to express it. It's so tough to pin down, but because it's become, yellow. It never really evolved past the yellow ribbon on the back of the truck. But there are opportunities out there for people to truly show their support. Hire a veteran. They've as young corporals at 20 years old, they were managing $500,000 worth of equipment. I'm sure they can hold down the morning shift at your small business. Maybe you don't know the kid down the street all that well. Why not buy him lunch and talk to him like a kid down the street rather than a veteran that you're trying to pry into? There are real meaningful ways for people to express their gratitude, and it starts with thank you for your service, but it can't end there.
You agree with that, Roy?
Yeah. Well, I think something Matt just said, like treating him like a human being and not necessarily, first of all, a veteran. First of all, someone who did this horrible thing or did this sacrifice, whatever. Like, just treating them as a human being first and foremost, I think is the key thing, because, that's what they are. And in order to get at any kind of other truth about their experience or the kind of relation you have to deal with them as a person, not as a symbol or as an icon or even as this imaginary figure.
Well, on that note, my thanks to the two of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us on, Martin.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it.
We've enjoyed it as well. And Ray Scranton and Matt Gallagher, our guests, their book that they have edited and contributed to is called Fire and Forget. It's an anthology of stories written by largely veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about us. In fact, if you go to our Facebook page, you can see what our guests look like. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.